but you. And when I do, I'll see you standing there. I'll lock my heart to any other caress. I'll never say yes to a new love affair. Gay. If you are not there, to share each lovely day, and through the years, and those moments when we're far apart. Don't you know I'll close my eyes, and I'll see you with my heart.
If a Middle Earth elf lived today in Southern California, how would she celebrate and support the arts, music, and her community? What would Arwen do? Thursdays, 4 to 5 p.m. with me, Tani Tenuvio, on KUCI 88.9 FM and streaming live at kuci.org. Ellen Salalumin Amenti Elfo.
Your attention, please. This is required listening information for all KUCI 88.9 FM radio frequency and KUCI.org broadband recipients. Weekly Signals with Mike Caspar and Nathan Callahan, a one-hour irreverent reality-based mashup of contemporary events, commentary and interviews, broadcasts every Tuesday beginning at 8 a.m. sharp. You may choose to listen to Weekly Signals Weekly Review, Seymour Hersh, Garrison Keillor, Terry Jones and Ariana Huffington, to name a few, on demand, online at weeklysignals.com or live during the Weekly Signals Tuesday morning 8 a.m. time slot. However you choose, your listening is required. Again, that's KUCI Weekly Signals Tuesdays, 8 a.m. and so on.
Darling, you say you want to write a book? Well, then you must listen to Writers on Writing, darling. Authors, literary agents gabbing and babbling about the art and the business of writing. Thursdays, 5 p.m. Darling, you must. Barbara DeMarco Barrett, she hosts. Yeah, listen, darling.
On KUCI FM in Irvine.
The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this or other KUCI programs, visit kuci.org or kucitalk.org.
And welcome once again to Writers on Writing at 88.9 KUCI FM. We are broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus and on the web at kuci.org. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. Writers on Writing features authors, editors, poets, and literary agents discussing the art and the business of writing. Today, my guest is Carolyn C. Carolyn is the author of five novels, including The Handyman and Golden Days. She's a book reviewer for The Washington Post and is on the board of Penn Center USA West. She has so many awards. I'm not going to name them all, but let's say a Guggenheim Fellowship in Fiction is one. And how every fiction writer would love that one. She lives in California, and she's here to talk today about her new novel, There Will Never Be Another You, along with her other work, Making a Literary Life and My California. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, dear. What should we talk about first?
Well, let's first talk about There Will Never Be Another You, because you have outdone yourself again. I loved Handyman, your last novel. And then I think after Handyman was the nonfiction work about writing, Making a Literary Life.
Mm-hmm.
And now this, There Will Never Be Another You, which I also loved. And I'd love to hear from you about how this book came about.
Well, it sort of came about the same way that Golden Days did, which is that the world got a little bit out of hand, and there's not very much, you know, I hate to say it, but there's not very much that a woman can do. I stayed home a lot and watched CNN and watched Rumsfeld in the year before, you know, before the Iraqi war, when it was just a constant propaganda babble, and developed a sincere dislike for the man. And I'm going to have to cough. Please excuse me. And around the same time, my life partner of 28 years, John Espy, was dying. And actually, John died a year before the Iraqi war, before 9/11. I don't know. But I suffered a lot of personal anguish, the way anyone does when somebody dies, and then a lot of impotent rage watching the government, in my opinion, go south. And so the only thing that a novelist can really do is write a book about it, so I did.
Interesting. Now, what I was wondering about your humor, because I don't remember Handyman being as funny as this book, although I loved it. I loved Handyman. Certainly Making a Literary Life was funny, and There Will Never Be Another You is bittersweet and has so many strokes of humor. I am curious, have you always been funny in your writing, or am I just noticing it now?
Well, what kind of not to be critical, what kind of a question is that? Yes, Barbara, I've always been funny. It's just been my role, yes. They laugh, and when they see me come in the room, they just fall right over.
Well, I just don't remember Handyman having this sort of humor where it's so singularly Carolyn C.
Well,
it's,
I think,
you know,
that
it's,
all of my books pretty much are meant to be pretty funny, and even Golden Days, which is about the end of the world, is meant to be pretty. There's a lot of funny stuff in it, because you can't deal with all this tragedy unless you have some way of laughing it off. You just can't hold that tragic note. Some people can, Joan Didion can, but I just can't, and never have. And in fact, the morning that John was in fact dying, my one daughter and his two daughters and a housekeeper and a hospice person were all over, and then my daughter Lisa C., the wonderful writer, came in, and she had to go to a business meeting, and she was all dressed up like a Chinese empress, and she had brought bagels and, you know, stuff for us to eat. And we'd been up all night, and we were all weeping, and she said, "Now listen, death is one thing, but I have something really important that I have to ask you about. I'm going to be meeting a person, a very important Chinese person named General Fu, and I would like to know, how can I say to him, 'How do you do, General Fu?'" And we laughed for an hour. You know, we laughed so hard. I mean, we laughed so hard we couldn't breathe. We laughed so hard we couldn't talk. The housekeeper became irate and had to leave the room. The hospice person was like, "What kind of barbarians am I, you know, taking care of today?" But then we would stop, and then we would look at each other, and we'd fall down laughing again. Because if you can't sort of say, "How do you do, General Fu," when things are bad, you're in trouble.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's that funny, but at the time. And then we knew another person called Dr. Maudlin at that time, and John's John's daughter said, "Lisa, I just have to ask you, why is your life full of people named Maudlin and Foo?" And again, we just crashed. And without that, you can't deal with the other stuff. You just can't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because, you know, it's like Dorothy on the road to Oz, you know, this way, suicide, this way, General Foo.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're listening to Writers on Writing on KUCI FM. I'm with Carolyn C., author of There Will Never Be Another You, published by Random House. You have a few different point of view characters in this book, and I'm curious about that. Why?
Well, I wanted to write a multi-generational novel without having to march down through the decades. I wanted to write about how this pervasive terror that the government, and I'm not saying it's just the government, I mean, it's certainly people on the other side, how a few dozen maniacs or maybe a few thousand maniacs have succeeded in seriously messing with our heads and making us afraid, and how that works when you're an older person and how it works when you're in your 40s trying to raise a family, and how it works when you're just a little kid when you're terrified all the time anyway. So I wanted to have an extended family, a mother-in-law, a well-meaning, wonderful, but rather dorky physician, and a couple of holy terror children, just, you know, little kids who you don't really know too much about what's going on in their heads, but you know they're just, you know, the jargon would be they're acting out. What's really going on, you don't know, because they have just regressed into savagery. And I was thinking, you know, today just happens to be a day where everybody just gets to be on red alert for a while, and I'm scared, and I'm 70. What must it be like when you're 7 to hear that stuff? It's just, I mean, my feeling is, what are they doing to us? And by they, I don't mean just our government. I mean the governments across the world. What are they perpetrating, and how can we cope with it? And that's what this book is about.
Mm-hmm. How much did you know about the book before you began? Did you know where it was going to end up? Did you know, you know?
I knew that there were going to be two happy endings, and one set of people, it would be a draw. You know, that one set of people would fight their fate to a draw. And two sets of people would win out over fate, because I certainly hope that that's what we get to do.
Hmm. Will you read to us?
Right now?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Okay, it's only 2 pages, so
okay.
don't get scared. And it's Edith, who's 10 years younger and 100 pounds lighter than I am, so she's very sophisticated. And she's kind of summing up the story, and she's talking about her son and her grandson, and they have gotten out. In fact, they've gone to sea. They've done the traditional male thing, but they've gone to sea in ways I don't want to talk about. They went on then, father and son, through calm and stormy seas. I keep in touch, or Phil keeps in touch, emailing or calling from everywhere without regard for time zone. He never was a master of light conversation, and he's gotten stranger over the years. "What are you drinking?" he'll ask. "What are you having for dinner tonight? Going out? Are you going out with anybody good? Or just the girls?" And once, surprisingly, "I always thought of you as kind of a glamour girl, for your age, I mean." I only laughed. It's been 15 years since my husband died. The real war hasn't happened yet. Many little ones have, epidemics and chemicals and explosives have ravaged certain parts of the globe. The trick, I suppose, is to stay off the beaten track, whatever the track may be. The talk now is mostly about China, the, quote, yellow menace, unquote, all over again. My grandson Vernon lives the high life. He's still working on that cruise ship, master of several languages, darkly handsome, more than available to dance with lonely women or, on occasion, men. His life is pleasure or the pursuit of it. To his father's amusement, he's a connoisseur of fine and awful wines. Vern hasn't once seen his mother since he left. Again, I hear this in rushed and sometimes drunken monologues from my son. Vern knew from the beginning who loved him and who did not. Vern emails me now and again, so I guess I sneaked in under the wire. I never see my granddaughter, and I can't say I miss the experience. Except for my monthly women's group, I don't stay on the mainland anymore. Like Phil, like Vern, I headed out. I took the hydrofoil into the Pacific, 26 miles out to Catalina. It was and is another world. The town of Avalon, only 10 blocks in each direction, streets of California bungalows bordered by trimmed trees of deadly nightshade. On summer days, it teems with tourists, but the winters are soft and dreamy. I've joined a dance club that meets at the old casino on the bay. The ceilings there are dotted with fake stars. The polished floors takes us swirling into a world we never really knew in life. The old men are dapper beyond belief. The old women, beautiful. Not dead yet is the category by which we describe ourselves. The phrase covers a lot of ground. In fairness, you can say the warriors who live in all those warring countries on both sides, on every side, are not dead yet. The demonstrating thousands in whatever arid Arab land are not dead yet. The politicians are not dead yet, nor are Felicia, my ex-daughter-in-law, and her offspring. The viruses, the poisons, the chemicals, the dirty bombs, the bacteria are certainly not dead yet. But where I live, people ride bikes and tiny runabout golf carts. They grow zinnias and morning glories. The high school baseball games are well attended. The bars at night and the churches in the mornings are always full. Sure, there is terror and war somewhere, and sure, we will all die, but we're not dead yet. The enigmatic Vernon, I've seen the pictures his loving father sends, approaches sweet, plump matrons each night and glides them out onto the tilting floor. His father makes his weekly phone calls to women he has loved and liked. He seems to have girls in every port, pouring out the story of his strange and very beautiful heart. And every weekend night, I walk down the salty, dewy avenues past Catalina's tiny waterfront, out to the brightly lit casino. We dance, mostly to rhythms from 60, 70, 80 years ago. We wish everyone well, but we don't want to be bothered. We've served our time, been duly terrorized by death and bad stories of every kind. We're past that now. We dance. We dance.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm dying of diphtheria over here. Just my depth of emotion, Barbara.
That was Carolyn C. reading from There Will Never Be Another You, published by Random House. I was sorry to see this book end, I must say. I loved it. How do you sort of keep all the various types of writing that you do separate? You You review books, you write essays, you, I don't know if you're working on any more longer narratives like Making a Literary Life, but, you know, you do long nonfiction, long form. How do you keep it separate, or do you?
I really don't. I mean, it's pretty much all the same thing. The reading of the, you know, I do a book review a week for the Washington Post, and that's great because it just gives me a chance to read a book, to read a book a week, and then to really just write a little. They're very kind to me, and they're very good to me, and they allow me great freedom. So I try to turn that from a book review into a kind of an essay about the particular book and about that kind of book and about where that book belongs in the rest of, you know, American literature. And sometimes, you know, I can really have a lot of fun. And then the wonderful thing is that when I'm in a bad mood, I don't have to go out and shoot. And I'm sorry. I'm talking myself funny. Anyway, I don't have to go out and shoot anyone because, you know, there's always a terrible book every month or so that just incurs my wrath, and it's well deserved. You know, I mean, it's a god awful book, and so every once in a while, I can write a really well deserved god awful review, and that's fun. And then when you're writing a novel, it's a whole other. You know, you sit down, you write your 1,000 words, you see what will happen, and then the nonfiction stuff is much closer to the book reviewing. It's more like writing a letter in your own voice. And I am working on another book, which is like Making a Literary Life, but it's a book of etiquette about death. And I'm having a wonderful time. I figure all those people died on me, so I might as well, you know, get some good out of it.
Book reviewing, though, now how does that work in terms of, I mean, you're sitting on both sides of the desk. You're an author who is subject to book reviews, and you do book reviews of other books. Now, when you do read something that you don't particularly like, how do you...
I don't gratuitously, let me just say, I would never, maybe in my youth, but not now, I don't ever take a gratuitous cheap shot. They have to be pretty bad for me to write them a bad review. And I would say with There Will Never Be Another You, I had written the bad review in 100 different ways. You know, I mean, I truly know the weak places in this novel, the places where if you were putting something together, you know, like if you bought it from IKEA and you had a book of instructions, the place where, you know, screw A doesn't fit into, you know, that I know the weak places. And I'm astonished that nobody has found them. And I think I got one bitchy line from the Boston Globe that said if people... Carolyn C. seems to think if people had enough money, they wouldn't have any problems. I just put that down to, you know, I don't know what. And then something bad from Entertainment Weekly, which is not a publication that I respect very much. But every other review has just been, if I do say so, dazzling, you know. I mean, they see something I don't see. So the thing is, you can only look at it and just give your honest opinion. You know, you're not God, and you don't want to unduly hurt anybody. And if there's anything good you can say, you certainly try and do it. And you especially don't want to say if they'd only written the book that I wanted them to write. You know, you have to, it's like dancing. You know, they have to take the lead, you have to follow.
Interesting. Yeah, it you are just so honest in your reviews on both ends. If you love something or you really don't love it at all, and so I'm always just curious about that. I mean, you know, having that power to, you know, contribute to making a book, having that power to contribute
to give somebody a bad few months. I have to say, I just finished today. I wrote a review that written by a man who is not from this country about the American South, involving a bunch of rednecks branding the name, well, N-word lover, on somebody's chest with a tire brace, T-Y-R-E-B-R-A-C-E, which I had to look up in the Oxford English Dictionary. I thought they meant like a jack, you know, like you jack up the car, but no, it was a wrench. But even so, you know, that's a pretty daunting task to brand 11 letters into, you know, with a red hot wrench. In fact, I don't believe it can be done. And I think the guy, you know, is unacquainted with our culture and is living in a dream world. So I said that. And luckily, he lives 8,000 miles away. He'll never catch up with me, so it's okay.
Oh, boy.
But, you know, I mean, they really have to, like, they can't just be, I mean, people try very hard. They do the best they can when they write a book. So it's not a reviewer's job to take gratuitous cheap shots.
Well, we have more to talk about. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in 2.5 minutes with more Carolyn C. So please stay with us. Don't go anywhere.
Come back, baby, please don't go. No, I love you, darling, hate to see you go. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. My heart's full of sorrow, mama aching tears. Gone 24 hours, child, seem like 1,000 years. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. Darling, one month built in a day. Let's talk it over before you go away. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time.
Weekly Signals, every Tuesday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. Join me, Mike Casper, and Nathan Callahan for the best in reality-based radio. That's Weekly Signals. Check out the website at weeklysignals.com.
It's Good News Week. Someone's dropped a bomb somewhere, contaminating atmosphere and blackening the sky.
For thought-provoking dialogue and talks that penetrate Orange County and beyond, listen to Subversity on KUCI 88.9 FM and webcast at KUCI.org. That's Subversity with your host, Dan Tseng, each Monday at 9 a.m. on KUCI.
Listen to... Writing, hosted by Barbara DeMarco, Barrett on Thursdays at 5 p.m. on KUCI FM in Irvine. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this or other KUCI programs, visit kuci.org or kucitalk.org.
Hello again, and welcome back to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM. We are broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus. We are also on the web at kuci.org. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, still. Since 5 o'clock, I've been here with Carolyn C., author of There Will Never Be Another You. Carolyn's website, in case you would like to know more about her books and her and what she's doing, where she's going, go to carolync.com. Also, we are podcasting now and archiving these shows at penonfire.com/writersonwriting. You can listen to a bunch of shows that have been on since whenever, 8 years ago, 9 years ago, however long I've been on the air. And this particular show will most likely go on or into the archive in the next week or two so that you can hear it again and tell all your friends to listen. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, honey. May I just say something else about book reviewing?
Sure.
I have to say, now that I was trashing that one book, that there's a terrific new book called Miss American Pie by Margaret Sarter that is so enchanting. It's about the American South. It's written in the form of a diary. It's nonfiction. It is amazing. It's just an amazing book. Something, again, her website just came up, and she's just... I was so blown away. I became, a bore at every party because I was just like, you have to read this and you have to read it now. So that's the other side of being a book reviewer
now,
when you find something like that.
Sure. Now, how does it work? Are you assigned books or do you get a pile and your editor says, pick a few?
No, I'm assigned them.
Interesting. Okay. So you have no choice. So if, you may have looked at a book earlier and said, I really hope I don't have to review this one because it's not going to be pretty.
No, I figure once you start saying, can I review this, can I review that, then corruption is just around the corner,
mm-hmm.
Because it may be written by your ex-husband, or it may be written by your best friend,
right.
Or it may be written by somebody who gave you a really terrific dinner and you never asked them back. And so you just have to let the chips fall where they may. And sometimes I wonder why they send me the books they do, but I think they laugh. I think they get the giggles back there and say, let's send this to Carolyn.
Well, you're, again, getting back to voice, your voice is apparent in everything you write. And I'm sure we've talked about this in the past when you've been on the show, but perhaps we have listeners who didn't listen to those shows. So I want to ask you again about voice. And if it was something you had to work toward, or when you started writing, were you simply you? Were you just...
I would say that voice is my curse because I've been, for instance, really angry with people and wanted to write an anonymous letter and have known that I can't get away with it because they'll know it's me. I don't know any other way to write, and it comes, I think, from my dad, who was this crazy old Texan, and again, who just loved the sound of... He was very well-educated, self-educated, but very well-educated, and loved literature, but he also had a silly streak, and so he would just play with words and play around with them, and again make himself laugh. Nobody else would be laughing, but he just would be. He'd knock himself out and think he was the funniest thing in the world. So I inherit that voice, and it's very different again from my daughter Lisa's voice, and from my other daughter Clara's voice. It's just, it's something I can't get away from and don't really want to, actually.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about Making a Literary Life, Advice for Writers and Other Dreamers.
I love that book.
I love this book, too, and I recommend it to my students every chance I get because I just, again, it's just such a fun read.
And there's no, I don't know if you can say this word, you can bleep it out, there's no bullshit in it. There just isn't any, you know, there's just not a lie in it that I can see. There's not false encouragement or false discouragement, it just is the facts about writing as closely and clearly as I can see them. And for that, I mean, I think it's extremely valuable. I really do.
I really like what you say about rewriting and how to kind of approach your first draft once you have it down. Do you use this method still?
Sure.
Will you talk a bit about it?
Well, if I can remember it, it's really you sit down and you're having a heart attack, and I don't really drink too much anymore, but in the old days I would just open up a bottle of wine and get a piece of paper and draw a line down the middle of the paper, and at the top of one side I'd say what I have, mm-hmm. and the other side what I need, and then just go through, and it's not all that different from reviewing a book, where you say you have 2.5 pages on, well, like I just read two pages about 600 words on, you know, Edith's voice from Catalina. Okay, I'm going backwards in the book, but I would say 600 words, Edith's voice, Catalina, what I need. You know, question mark, what do I need there? Do I need to say how I got there, or do I, you know, whatever it is. You just outline the book page by page by page, you know, 750 words on Phil's affair with the crazy woman in the Escada suit, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And what I need, be sure she has her shoes on, even though she's in bed. You know, that kind of thing. I mean, so then you have a list, and it's so anxiety-producing just to look at your work that not the palms of your hands, but the back of your hands are sweating. You know, you're just a wreck. But that's why a little white wine with some blueberries calms you down, and you just think, all right, I'm just taking it paragraph by paragraph, you know, page by page by page. I'm not going to make a judgment. By the time you get done, you have about 15 pages of, it's not an outline exactly, you know, it's a map of what you've done. And then you can look at it, and, you know, you can just say, things I need, oh my God, they have 4 children in this chapter and 3 children in this chapter, you know, equalize the children, exclamation
sure.
point. But it's not scary because you can just take it one thing at a time and go through it over and over, go through the draft over and over, crossing out what I need. You know, as you fix it, you cross that out.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another time when you go through. Don't I sound boring? I'm
not
boring
at all.
Like, oh, geez.
All writers love to hear about how to get
this
through revision.
You read it another time just for repetitions, and you make a list. And I think these are separate times that you read it. You don't do it all at once or you go nuts. But you read it through for repetitions of words if they come snapping out at you. John, when he was alive, used to love to use the word relish as a verb. And he and Lisa, my daughter, and I collaborated on some popular novels, and we would be working together, and he'd say, he relished the scent of the jasmine, and Lisa and I would say, no, he didn't relish it. We're not, you know, you're not eating a hot dog. This is a novel. Stow the relish. And then a little bit later, he'd say, he couldn't help it. But then the thing is, relish was one of his words that mm-hmm. you just knew. For me, proceeded. When I was first writing, it couldn't be she ate a hamburger. She proceeded to eat a hamburger. She just couldn't get around to getting that hamburger to her mouth, you know. She had to proceed to eat the hamburger. And once you see these words, then you start making little check marks and page notes, and you know, and then you think, but you know, relish, I love that word, you know. So then I'm allowed one relish every 100 pages, or you know, one. Well, proceeded is not my favorite word anymore, but
or one exclamation point per book.
That's what they say. I throw in a few more because I like them. See what I could get away with. But, you know, you read it through for that. Then you read it through for just weird repetitions, you know, and inconsistencies, and you read it through for that. And then if you do give it to someone else to read, which I don't believe in, and I'm not really a great believer in workshops or giving things to your husband or your... Even though I did, you know, do work with my daughter and with John, but the understanding is look for repetitions. Some guy, I will just say, the other day came and was an old friend of mine, was a house guest for 2 days. He's never heard of a hotel. He was a house guest, and then he wrote me a note about there will never be another you, saying, I would have been a little more pleased if there'd been a little less fill in the narrative. And I was like, you eat my homemade quesadillas and then you presume to criticize my hero? You know, which marked him as an amateur. Not a bad man, but just an amateur.
You know, I want to just say something about Phil really quickly, and if you just
Phil
tune,
is the 40-year-old good heart.
Yeah, and if you just tune in, you're listening to Writers on Writing, and I'm talking with Carolyn C., and we're about to discuss again There Will Never Be Another You, her most recent novel published by Random House. I liked Phil. I didn't find him troublesome, and I remember about a month ago you and I emailed after I saw you on Between the Lines with Barry Kibrick, and you said, you know, he just didn't like that Phil, but I think he likes me. And I said, yeah, well, he does like you, but yeah, he didn't like Phil.
He had a fit.
Is it a male thing, do you think?
Conniption. And it's really hard to be like on a program for an hour with a man who's having a conniption fit. And he just had a conniption. It just made him crazy. It was like I took out a jar of potato bugs and said, here.
It's
like, get him away. I don't like him. And he hated Phil. And he really was reduced to saying, you know, either during the show or during a break, you know, I love you, Carolyn. I just hate Phil. And there it was.
Yeah, I didn't hate Phil. I liked Phil, and I was thinking about his response, and now this reaction by your former guest. And I wonder if it's more guys have problems with Phil and women don't. I don't know.
I think guys would certainly like it if they could just come home to like dinner every night, and their wives would be cooperative, and their kids would do their homework, and they'd get regular promotions, and their mistresses would not call them at home, and their cars wouldn't break down, and if there were a world situation, they would be like Steve McQueen and get on a motorcycle and engineer the Great Escape, you know? But in fact, that's not how anybody is, and it must be especially saddening to guys who have any brains right now, that, you know, there's so little that can actually be done. We're just patsies, and nobody likes to see a guy be a patsy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, and I mean, it hurts guys. Mr. Kibrick, who I adore as a person, just kept saying, why doesn't he get control of his children?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a very good question that you could ask almost any parent on the face of the earth. You know, why don't you get control of your children? Because you can't. That's it. Sorry.
Mm. Yeah.
Am I sounding belligerent? I
mean, no. No, because
no,
obviously you...
He does the best he can.
No.
An angel can do no worse than a donkey can do no better, you know?
Yeah. No, I thought Phil was a great character, actually. I kept waiting to dislike him after seeing that show, but I never did. I continued to like him. Okay, back to Making a Literary Life. I wanted to ask you, and I don't think you talk about outlining in this book, or maybe you do, and it's, you know, it's been a while since I've read that part, but do you outline?
I don't. Lisa does. Again, my wonderful daughter, Lisa, who writes marvelous books, she writes outlines. She knows where she's going. She's got it down. I generally write the first chapter and then the last chapter, and then the second chapter, and then the penultimate chapter, and like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I start writing my favorite chapters. You know, I wake up in the morning and don't want to write like everybody else, and then I think, well, if I had my choice of anything, what would I write? And then I, you know, write that one.
So you write them out of order.
Out of order, and then, of course, there's a terrible moment in time when you have to put it together chronologically, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. Well, it works.
But I don't like, outlines creep me out because then it's all done for you, so there are very few surprises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's the discovery that's then just, you know, bye-bye. You know, I know where it's all going.
Yeah, that's my feeling. But then my books aren't very intricately plotted, although I think this one is pretty intricate.
I think this one is, yeah.
But generally speaking, that's never been my strong suit, is plot.
Okay, well, it worked.
Oh, good.
There Will Never Be Another You Worked. I love the title, and I love the song in the book, and yeah, it's a wonderful book. Okay, a little bit about My California, which is an anthology about California with a lot of writers, Michael Chabon, T. Jefferson Parker, just a lot of wonderful writers. You have a wonderful essay in this book, and I just want us to talk a minute about it because I really want people to continue to buy this book. It supports the arts in California.
And I think dollar for dollar, it's one of the best values on the market.
Yeah, I agree. I think the essays, so many strong essays in here.
It's just a treasure chest. And it's so amazing that instead of bitching and moaning about how the California Arts Council doesn't have any money, that two wonderful women got together and said, okay, let's do something about it. Let's put together an anthology and sell it. And everybody stepped forward and everybody did it. And you have some marvelous, just the greatest essays, I think. My favorite is, what's her first name? Mary McKay?
Mm-hmm.
About swimming in the American River up in Sacramento,
right,
and being mistaken for a duck.
Mary Mackey. Yes.
A duck comes up to her and thinks, you know, sort of says, hi, duck, and then is like, oh, my God, you're not a duck. And just, I don't know, I've never read that anywhere in
right.
a book. And I just thought that's so typical of, like, California writing. It's something that... It's full of originality and imagination and things you never have seen before, and certainly I love that volume.
And if you out there want to know more about this book, go to mycaliforniaproject.org or californiaauthors.com, and you can read about this And it's in bookstores, or maybe you can find out more at the websites about the book, where to buy it. And there's still some promotion going on.
Oh, Santa Barbara is reading it as an entire community, and Whittier is reading it as an entire community. And I think Long Beach has already done that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really the little book that will never die.
Yeah.
Just astonishing.
It's great.
It has classic pieces in it.
Okay, we have a few minutes left. There Will Never Be Another You. How long was the manuscript to this book, and did it change during your revision?
It didn't change very much. Not to over-dramatize, but I lost four people during the writing of this book. John Espy, my life partner, my mother, my little sister, and a dear, dear family friend, Harvard Gordon, to whom the book is dedicated, along with my autistic grandson, Dash. So I had four. I didn't have them. They occurred. It's self-centered to say I had them, but I was an observer of four deaths and my grandson's diagnosis. And so I had a lot of just grief, and it kind of addles your mind. And so I would just bribe myself to write the 1,000 words and just say, if you can just write them, just do it, and then you can go off and do something else. And usually I overwrite and cut by about a half, but this I cut very, very little. My editor made me cut my favorite scene, of course, but that's par for the course. but I cut very, very little. I felt that it was a triumph just to get through it.
Yeah. And just to...
But let me say, there are many happy endings in the book. It's not a heartbreaker. I was just writing from a kind of an adult position.
Yeah. And I think the humor it's so prevalent in the book that it just is there when you need it.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think I want to actually go into it on the air, but I love the one, let me see if I can find it. There's a simile, like a postcard of a subway, pink and clean, curving off.
Yes.
I love that. It's like whoever would come up with that except for you.
Well, I actually have a collection of antique postcards with a picture of a subway, pink and clean, that looks a lot like what we're talking about. So that's where that came. I can't claim, you know, originality. But there's a lot of, even though there's just a tiny little love story in the middle of the book, the whole thing is coated with sexual innuendo. And that's, again, because there's so much death going around that there has to be enough sex to kind of keep the thing afloat. You know, it's like I have a friend who was in an almost fatal car crash, and she said there were like four people in the car, one person died. And she said the other three just adjourned to a motel and had sex until they were blind. Because that has to be what counters the fear of death. Which is the reason why there are young lovers in the book, but also there's another scene with mussels, creamed mussels.
Yes.
That's all I have to say about that.
Oh, boy. Well, gee, we're at the end of our time again, and I wonder if you have any advice for the writers who are making their way through perhaps a book-length manuscript.
1,000 words a day. And one charming note to a person who makes your hands sweat, and that's 5 days a week for the rest of your life, and then the rest of the time, don't think about it. Just don't worry about it. Don't make it be something you have to do, or you ought to do, or you should have done. I mean, just do it like brushing your teeth, and then let it go and play as much as you can, I think, is really the trick.
Thank you so much again for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you, dear, so much for having me.
And continued great luck on the book.
Thank you, honey.
That was Carolyn C. speaking to us from Los Angeles. And I love this book, as I've been saying. And I just dropped my paper. Sorry about that. Anyway, I guess we're done for the day until next week. If you want to know more about Writers on Writing, you can visit my website at penonfire.com. Click on the radio tower. You'll be taken to the radio page. You can listen to past shows. You can find out who's coming on. I try to keep it somewhat up to date. You can get on a weekly email list if you would like to know Thursday morning who's going to be on. Thursday afternoon, I don't use the list for anything else. You can write to me at penonfire@earthlink.net. I'm going to leave you with a quote by Mickey Spillane, actually, who said, "If you're a singer, you lose your voice. A baseball player loses his arm. A writer gets more knowledge, and if he's good, or she, the older he or she gets, the better he writes." Thank you for listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. My book is Pen on Fire, and I'll talk at you next time.